You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Forever. Dog.
I used to think that this was my town. What a stupid thing to think. I hear you biting off a brain now. I myself am on the brink. I used to want to be a real man. I don't know what that even means. Now I just want you in my arms again. And we can search each other's dreams. I know you're tired.
We have a really awesome interview that I think you are going to dig very hard with Dr. Meredith J. Wills, who is an astrophysicist, a knitter, and a baseball fan. We'll be back right after this with an interview with Meredith J. Wills, Dr. Meredith J. Wills, astrophysicist, right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I am so excited about our guest, 3Bs. You're going to be this. I cannot wait for this conversation that's about to happen. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Meredith J. Wills. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love for you to introduce yourself to everybody that's listening, because I feel like you're going to do a much better job than I am.
Okay. Hi, I'm Meredith. I have a PhD in astrophysics. I now work as a sports data scientist, and I have spent a huge chunk of the last, well over a year tearing apart baseballs.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I got into that and will get into that. But I'm curious, because I ask everybody that's on the show this same question. Like, what is your relationship to baseball? Like, when did it start? How did it start? You know?
Okay. I was born on opening day.
Hell yeah.
I was 3 weeks old when my dad took me to my first ball game.
3 weeks?
I actually remember 3 weeks. Absolutely.
What if you did remember that? You'd be a good astrophysicist.
You cut off. No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, no, that's what I
as my dad will repeatedly tell me, Steve Carlton was pitching.
Nice.
And I have since, in fact, I even still somewhere have the batting helmet, the giveaway batting helmet that they gave to all the kids.
Yeah.
I was 3 weeks old. I was entitled to a batting helmet.
Wow.
And, but yeah, Steve Carlton was pitching. My dad will remind me of this. And I've since gotten to know Scotty Carlton a bit.
Cool.
And he said, oh, yeah, well, if you send me the helmet, my dad will autograph it. And so, you know, kind of everybody freak out. My dad thought it was cool too. I need to track the helmet down. I think it's in storage in Boston, but I have it.
You got to get it done, Meredith.
I will get it done.
I believe in you. I believe in you. So yeah, so yeah. You were like just in it from birth in a baseball family, or was it just a dad thing?
Well,
or what was
my dad play? I mean, my dad was particularly, he was an obsessive Milwaukee Braves fan. Like the entire time he grew up, you know, in Wisconsin, and the team didn't exist for a ton of time, but it was basically during kind of all the formative years for him. And what you have to realize is it wasn't just opening day, but it was also the day that Hank Aaron tied Babe Ruth's home run record.
Oh,
and
wow.
Of course, Hank did all his entire career with the Braves, including the whole time they were in Milwaukee. So,
and you were born on that day.
I was born on that day.
Wow.
My dad is not somebody who I associate with being particularly, you know, religious superstitious, but he literally went out and bought me a baseball bat the day I was born. He was convinced from then I was supposed to be a Hall of Famer, which has happened. Forget all the big degrees and all the stuff. What he was excited about was basically that I have stuff in the Hall of Fame now. And I do, in fact, now do collaborations with him. So,
well, let's get into that because it's come up. You know, because we'll get into the astrophysics a little bit later, but like,
oh God.
Tell everybody how you got into the Hall of Fame. You're the second person that I've talked to that's in the Hall of Fame, which is very cool. Justine Siegel. She has.
Okay. Yeah. I know Justine a little.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. But yeah, she's just an amazing person.
She is an amazing, just a mm-hmm. tremendous human being. She has her batting practice jersey at Cooperstown. So how did you get in there?
Nothing nearly so grandiose.
Well, I don't know about that.
No, it's actually, it's a cute story, which is that, I tear apart baseballs. I do baseball stuff and I have done astrophysics. The other kind of part of that is I am a knitter and specifically a knitting designer. If you do a search on me and knitting, you'll find stuff that's, heck, I think I've got a pattern coming out next week, you know, whatever just happens. So about, I think it was in 07, a fan organization called Stitch and Pitch had a national contest looking for, you know, they just wanted people to do different designs and different kinds of fiber arts things. What Stitch and Pitch is basically they'll do like one game a season. And, you know, with the special ticket or whatever, and you bring your knitting or your crochet or your embroidery, and there's a giveaway. And, you know, I actually even made the big board at Miller Park one year.
Wow.
During Stitch and Pitch, which was kind of fun. It was a total fluke, I think. But so I ended up winning this design contest in 07 with a pair of socks that I designed. And I had a couple pair that I did because the whole premise is that you can use different logos. So I did two pair. One was Yankees, one was Rockies. And I desperately need to go in and update them. The pattern is available for free online.
Yes.
If you want, maybe we can put a link. You can put a link.
Absolutely. It'll be in the footnotes.
And it has to be available for free because otherwise I'm sure MLB would want to charge me royalties.
A lot.
But it was a MLB approved contest. So
great.
We're cool. And so the socks that had the Rockies logo, in 2009, the Hall of Fame approached me and said, you know, they wanted to recognize Stitch and Pitch as a fan organization, and would I be willing to donate those socks? And so in 2010, you know, this is my dad refers to it as my induction, which I think is hysterical.
It's great. I love that.
On display, and they're actually still on display.
Wow.
And since then, I've now done there's a pair of stirrup socks I did to go with Eddie Goodell's uniform.
Wow.
For one thing. So the guy who was like 3 foot something that Bill Veeck brought in, and I'm now also doing a couple collaborations with them. The one that's sort of the most visible right now is doing a stitch by stitch reproduction of a sweater that Ty Cobb donated.
I saw that on your Blogspot. Beautiful.
That's the whole point of the Blogspot, and that's it's been on hiatus a bit because I've had a whole bunch of, you know, great new job and now all this stuff with the baseballs, but I am finally pulling the sweater out again and it's almost done, I swear.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's like gorgeous. Yeah. It's like gorgeous work.
And it's actually just been like, as a scientist, it's actually been fascinating to do that because, you know, there are a whole bunch, sorry, I'm going to geek out a little here.
Please.
There are a lot of construction techniques that you don't see in knitting at all. nowadays, which is interesting to me.
Like from the time of Ty Cobb.
From the time, not just the time of Ty Cobb, but I've since gone back to the Hall of Fame a couple times to look at this stuff, and they've got 8 or 9 sweaters, I guess. So I've looked at some from different periods, but there's one from like 1935, 37, that's the same construction. And so all I can figure is that some of this stuff, it might have been up to like around World War II. And then after World War II, stuff changed, you know, because they did these factories. And what you have to realize is these were mass produced, but they were mass produced largely by hand.
Right.
Because that's just what you did. And so there are some techniques that I guess it doesn't surprise me that the mass production, you know, like the sweater you buy at, you know, insert store here, isn't going to have these techniques. But the fact that, like, if you get a knitting pattern, you still don't see these. Somehow these get lost very, very quickly. And so it's been really cool reverse engineering it from, you know, seeing the sweater a couple times and taking a lot of pictures and a lot of notes and trying. I think I finally nailed it on draft number 4.
So you mean like you started sweaters 4 times and on the 4th one you got the stitch right?
If you go back and look, I even got all the way. I made it. I was probably 3/4 of the way through and decided, no, this is not going to work. Ripped it out, started over. That was like trial 2. But this time, I mean, and that's what I mean about learning about it, is some of it's trial and error. Some of it's having an aha moment. This does sort of permeate my whole life, by the way. So we can call this, you know, an analogy or a whatever. I'll think of the word. There's a good word.
Sure. Well, wait, what, when you say this permeates your whole life, what's this?
Well, the idea of doing that kind of curiosity and problem solving. So like the baseball, for instance, the baseball construction stuff, in a way also started with Hall of Fame collaborations, not specifically the study part, but the other thing that I've been doing with them, and because I've been working on the Ty Cobb sweater, this hasn't moved forward at quite the same rate, is I discovered that, you know, baseballs are mostly yarn inside.
Yes.
And it turns out that the yarn is knittable. And so I started doing, you know, because I'm a designer, original designs with the idea that we're then going to auction them off as fundraisers for the Hall of Fame, because it is a 501c3. It's not like MLB supports it. So it's a museum, you know, that's how it stays in business. You know, everyone's going to the Hall of Fame induction, and I hope they spend a lot of money in support of the Hall of Fame, because, I mean, I love it. But so the idea is that we'll, you know, auction off these sweaters that I'm going to be, or not, it's not just sweaters, but like my latest project is a sweater, baseball yarn, you know, to raise money. And it turns out that you need to take apart an awful lot of baseballs.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
So it's like 20 base. I think it requires like 20 baseballs roughly to get like a men's sweater.
20 baseballs to a shirt, basically.
Pretty much. And Major League Baseballs are hard to get.
Yeah.
So hence, you know, when we do auction these off, I hope they bring in a lot of money, because we, at the very, not that I'm paying, you know, these are donated baseballs, but still it's, you know, you'd like to think you make up whatever the cost the team would have paid type thing.
Yeah, of course. And the time and all of it. That's really fun. So do you use the red yarn also?
The laces I have not worked in yet. I do have one design in mind where I could. But the problem is that they're so much thinner.
Oh, sure.
It's a little tough. I could probably do them Knit Geek again.
Yeah.
As what you'd almost call a carry thread.
Uh-huh.
It's like if I did it alongside something else.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
I'm not sure that's a look I'd want. So,
wow.
But there is.
So kind of a hit and run situation is what you're talking about.
Something like that. Yeah.
So I love this. See, this is what I love about. This is personally what I love about baseball, the fact that knitting and baseball are intertwined in this way. They're knitted together, if you pardon the pun, you know.
That's all right. It's all right.
It's so wild, because you know, looking at the two things, you would be like, there's no way that these two things have anything to do with each other, and you're like, nope, they totally do.
Well, the interesting thing actually is that for the 2017 home run surge, and then to a certain extent for the current one, I would not have figured that out had I not been a knitter.
Wow.
You know,
let's get into the home run surge stuff and all of the data, because I read it and then I was like, I cannot wait for her to tell me what this is. Because that's fascinating that, like, you wouldn't have, the knitting is what gets you into it. And also your curious science doctor brain, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what I love.
One thing I think people should realize, though, is that it is kind of the curiosity and the asking questions and the having an idea of context and what you're looking at. Because people, they hear astrophysicists, they think, you know, there's this very esoteric association with what it means to do science. And, you know, having that title sort of adds to that stereotype. So they're picturing things like, you know, computers and wind tunnels and that's necessary. And there are absolutely people who are doing that stuff. In my case, my tools were things like a box cutter and a T-pin and a chopstick.
Yeah. And a microfiber cloth.
Microfiber cloth. Yeah. The board I used to get the smoothness measurements. I could have gone to Home Depot and bought one, except that one of my neighbors very nicely left a stack of perfectly good bookcase boards sitting next to the big trash bin outside the building. So
look at that. So much better than spending money to do it.
Exactly. And it was just as good. And I also, you know, the other thing is I'm not getting funded for this guy.
Right. Of course. I mean, so you did so much research on, because when I was just sort of walking into this idea, I mean, I have my sort of very pedestrian theories on the home run surge and the effects that have nothing to do with that. I'm like, yeah, of course the ball is something. To me, it's other aspects that it all comes together in this sort of, you know, just a meeting of all these points that create like the most home runs of all time. One of them being time itself. Like the fact that baseball has been played for over 150 years, 150 professionally in Major League Baseball.
Sure.
That at some point, of course, it has to be like this, you know, and we just happen to be living in it to a certain extent. That's not a very scientific, that's more of a spiritual look at it, you know?
There's something to be said for that, although I, you know, sort of thinking about some of the, the more discussions I have, the more stuff kind of, I don't know, crystallizes maybe, you know, you have new ideas, new interpretations. I mean, one thing, for instance, that in retrospect, actually, certainly for this time around, but even previously, the stuff that the Home Run Committee did, I'm not surprised that they found it was the ball. And part of the reason is because what you needed was something that was going to basically be universal across the game. So everybody kind of had the same thing. And it was also something that in particular, the idea that it was the aerodynamics. If it's not the aerodynamics, the way you would know that is basically because the nature of the impact, you know, essentially how the ball is coming off the bat. And that's something we can measure with exit velocity.
Yes.
So if exit velocities had gone up, that would say, okay, it's either a different characteristic of the ball or the bat or the players. The fact that there's been a little bit of an increase in exit velocity this year, but it's certainly not enough to account for this. And there's even some speculation that it may just almost be like a, I don't want to call it a rounding error, but StatCast hasn't been around that long.
Right.
And the tech gets better and better every year. So the idea that maybe exit velocity has been going up a little bit over time anyway, and it just kind of ends up in the noise. And this time it just hasn't. But they're just, it's not like everybody changed their bats at the same time. I mean, it could be that we're in the middle of another PED scandal, but that would say exit velocity. And
right.
Since exit velocity isn't up, it's got to be how the ball travels through the air, which of course made this time around much easier. Cause it's like, okay, it has to be the ball.
It has to be the ball. Else. Yeah. I mean, that's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And then even with the previous one, like, there's a certain process of elimination almost that suggests that. It was just, and it's what the Home Run Committee found for the 2017 surge. And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, basically with, you know, kind of the same letters that I have after my name and all that stuff. And you know, a lot of very, very smart people, you know, physicists, mathematicians, engineers, all that stuff. But, and they, what they found was they found, again, gee, the draw ball's traveling farther. The drag was down specifically, but they didn't know what was different. And so that's where kind of I got lucky, and knowing something about knitting was what came into to play.
Wild. Can you yeah. nail down exact, like, just your understanding of knitting is it, or was it a specific aspect of knitting that, like, opened that door into your research on the ball that then helped out the home run committee?
Well, basically, I mean, I guess knitting, someone who does weaving would know this too, but one of the ways that you can tell, essentially, the term we use is gauge, and it just has to do with, like, how many stitches you're going to have, or in the case of weaving, you know, how many threads you're going to have in a given direction. You want to know how thick your yarn or your thread or whatever is. And so you do something you call wraps per inch, which is you literally take whatever you're knitting or weaving with and you wrap it around some dowel that has measurements on it, you know, like in this case, inches usually. And you figure out, okay, you know, it's if it's got 10 wraps per inch, you're going to get something that's the stitches will be roughly this big. If it's 15, they're going to be roughly this big. And it was literally the last measurement I did, and the one that wasn't sort of on my list of things to do. It was looking at the, in this case, the laces. And I'm not going to get this quote. It's Isaac Asimov, which is something along the lines of, you know, great discoveries are not generally accompanied by Eureka, but by the phrase, that's funny.
Yeah.
And that's, he's quite right, or was quite right. But in this case, it was going through and I was trying to get lengths on the laces and realized that the balls I was looking at, and these were kind of pre home run surge and home run surge balls for, you know, related to the 2017 one, that they just looked different. They looked one, you know, it looked like it might be a thickness thing. And so what I did was I took a chopstick and I put ruler tape along it. And in this case, I didn't do wraps per inch because the laces are pretty thin. So it was wraps per centimeter. And that was it.
Wow.
And just, so I mean, so yeah, literally the knitting knowledge was what solved the problem.
Wow.
And on top of that, that was last June. That, so it, you found the difference in the ball. It then comes to, all right, how does that difference end up giving you home runs?
Right.
And what I then, and again, once again, fiber arts is great. The laces are cotton. And what I realized was that, you know, the way, and kudos to the home run committee for reporting this, but what it looked like was that when Rawlings, after the balls are made, you know, everything's set, and they just would let them air dry. Because you what you have to do in order to get the leather to conform to a spherical ball, you basically have to soak it, and you then, you know, kind of attach it on, and then you put the stitches in using the laces, and the ball's wet, so it's got to dry. And so they would just let them air dry. And the thing with cotton, though, is if you get it wet and the stitches are pulled super tight, I mean, obviously, anyone's held a baseball, you know this. Wet cotton, if it's stretched and dries, stays stretched. So what I thought was happening and what seems to have been the case was that thinner cotton, thinner laces will stretch more because they're just not as strong. And so what that means is that the balls before the home run surge had thinner laces. And so if they're stretching more, that basically means almost you're getting like a bulging at the seams. It'd be almost like the ball is pulling itself apart a little along the seams, as opposed to with the thicker laces, they're just not going to stretch as much because they're thicker. So it doesn't pull away from itself as much as the seams, and hence the ball stays rounder. And so yet again, look, knitting knowledge I have, or at least fiber arts. You know, look, I know that that air dried cotton stays stretched. I have a feeling actually that may also be the biggest reason that what's going on now is happening, which this is going to sound kind of weird, but I put this out in September, and the one thing that you're seeing several things, you're seeing like a number of them, but the things that seem to be having the greatest effect on the aerodynamics for the 2019 ball are basically that the seam height is much lower. It's like half as high. And the balls are rounder. I mean, they're about as close to perfectly round as you can get, like subtracting out the seams. And the laces seem to be sitting lower. I can't quantify that exactly the same way, but pitchers are talking about how it's much harder to pull the laces up, you know, how they tend to do that to get a better grip or to try to get, break differently. And so what it looks like is that the laces are not stretching during the drying process anymore.
Huh.
And that's even more interesting because they went back to the thinner laces on this new ball as well. And I suppose what that relates to is that the 2017 ball seemed to be related to a massive increase in pitcher blisters.
Right. Yes, I remember
so,
that.
So, and the thicker laces, you know, and in fact, you know, Rich Hill in 2016.
I was just going to say Rich Hill.
Oh yeah. Well, not just that, but he literally said, check the lace thickness to MLB. Yeah. So like that's on the record. And so it's, you know, kudos to MLB for taking that seriously. And once I found evidence of thicker laces, they went back to thinner laces, but you somehow have thinner laces, which in theory should be stretching more, not stretching at all. And the only way that I can think of that you can dry cotton under those conditions such that it doesn't stretch is by putting it under, say, like a, it would be the equivalent of throwing the t-shirt you've just washed in the dryer so that it kind of shrinks back to like before you wore it, you know, because it gets all stretched out during the day.
Yeah.
And so I think,
so you think they're drying the balls?
They're drying the balls probably under some kind of hot air flow. Think of taking like a blow dryer to the baseballs.
Right. But then would that do anything to the home run pop? Heating up leather like that?
It has nothing to do with heating up the leather. It has to do with the fact that the laces suddenly don't stretch.
Yeah.
So the ball gets rounder, or stays rounder, I should say. And a rounder baseball is going to travel farther. And I think as a side effect of that, what's happening is those laces are, because they're not stretching, they're forcing the seams to stay flatter.
Right.
And lower seams also make the ball travel further. And so by taking a blow dryer to the baseballs, 2019 home run surge. And if I hadn't published that article last September, it would never have dawned on them.
Wow. So it's possible that the balls are juiced, but it was to try to remove blisters.
Well, I wouldn't even say
when I say juiced,
what also happened with thicker laces. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like it's the thing is juiced and it's not necessarily intentional.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I will say is that, yeah, it's they clearly knew ahead of time.
Like, sure.
Joel Sherman had an article in the New York Post. I think it was like April 11th, and MLB officials said they knew the drag was down. The ball and by definition, lower drag means more home runs.
Right.
Like one just is the other. So they're on the record saying that back in April, and somehow nobody exactly ran with it or, you know, pointed that out to Manfred when he said, oh, no, this is just, you know, natural variation, and wouldn't even quite acknowledge that it was the drag until just in the last few weeks, which was a little bit odd. Because
right. He was talking about the
from his office. We're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
So
and they were like they were talking about he was saying it was that the pill was centered, right?
The pill. If you were to have start from an off-centered pill and make it more centered, that would actually improve drag. It's about the only thing inside the ball that will do that. I mean, the way I like to think of it is when you throw a football and it's a spiral, you know, that's how you're supposed to throw a football. If you're me and you throw a football, it totally tumbles in the air.
Sure. Yeah.
That ball that tumbles just does not travel as well. It's actually because it's spinning like that and the spin is centered that the thing travels the way it does. So if the pill or the core was slightly off center, it would effectively tumble in the air a little. However, if you actually look at how they make the baseballs, you know, they start with that pill, and then they, you know, have this really impressive machine that winds the yarn on, and then there's, you know, the various layers. It's really, really hard to wind a baseball and keep the pill off center.
Yes. Yeah.
It just, and so it's like a non-problem.
It's antithetical to the machine itself. Right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was proposed by the home run committee, but I don't think it was proposed we've looked into the manufacturing process.
Right.
Because clearly they didn't.
Yeah. They just said, maybe it's this. And then we're like, it's this.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, even to the point where in the, you know, as part of the home run report or the home run committee's report, they did go to Rawlings. They had, you know, this whole list of maintenance things and process improvements and stuff. And then there's this great little sentence and they're saying, yeah, you know, this is really too technical and it clearly can't have any effect on what's going on. And that was kind of full stop, went on. That's obviously a paraphrase, but the point being that, that construction aspect or the extent to which little changes in the construction were having an effect or were viable to begin with was not something that they took into account. And that's, I think, just has to do a lot with the backgrounds of the people on the committee. You know, they do their stuff really, really well, but you know, there are people who are in manufacturing on the committee. I was surprised there were no players on it, honestly. That's one that kind of...
That's pretty
strange.
Surprising, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Well, so what kind of people are on it? Like, what are their backgrounds?
Let's see. There are people who have... Like I said, you know, physicists, mathematicians, engineers, but you have people who tend to specialize more in things like simulations or lab experiments or, I'm trying to think, like, you know, I suppose wind tunnel counts as lab, but it's much more controlled, I should say.
Sure.
And in fact, I think that's how do I put this? The goal, certainly with the home run committee and Rawlings' goal to a large extent, is that the idea of having the balls as similar to each other as possible seems to be a big thing. That was certainly what the home run committee wanted. Like, they basically did not like the extent that the balls varied from each other. This is treated as a problem. It is a fact. I don't necessarily know if it's supposed to. I mean, I don't know if the balls are all supposed to be the same, if they're, you know, within spec. And I'm perfectly happy to run with the within spec if we, you know, understand a little more about the construction. But I kind of think it's cool that baseballs are different from each other. I mean, they are handmade. It's the only, I don't know if cricket balls are or not, but certainly in this country, I'm trying to think of another popular sport where the ball is handmade.
Yeah, I mean, and it brings us kind of full circle to the beginning of this conversation, which is you talking about those sweaters that were mass produced, yet all made by hand.
Exactly. I love that. That's a great connection. I hadn't thought of that. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just like, it's all connected. And that's what I really love about, I mean, baseball in general. It's so like, again, pun intended, woven into the fabric of... this country in
it's,
a way
it's really easy to come up with the puns.
Yeah, I mean, they're right there and it's kind of my job, so
that's okay.
I don't have a degree
actually,
in it, but
here's one for you. What I mean, because I started working in baseball, I would notice this. I defy you to get through a conversation or any, you know, period of time where you don't end up pulling in a baseball analogy without even thinking about it. You know, you talk about, you know, something
Let's touch
being
base.
On base or out of left field.
Yeah.
After a while, it's just ahead of the curve. Of course, I suppose that could be racing. But the point being, it's just like, they're all there.
It's all there all the time. And people who actively dislike baseball use them all the time.
But that's,
you know,
they're part of the language.
It's part of the language.
People don't know how to not to use them.
I know, exactly. They do not know.
Yeah.
You've got so many strikes against you. I mean, come on. It's right there.
There you go. Yeah.
So I want to know what your job is in baseball now and what you're doing there.
Well, what I'm doing, I'm working for the company is Sports Media Technology, or SMT. It used to be Sport Vision. So now we're umbrellaed under SMT. And they were the ones who created PitchFX, which is what was, you know, the pitch tracker before TrackMan. And so, in fact, there's I don't know if we're still at most of the pitching data as PitchFX, but they're probably comparable at this point. And so MLB went with StatCast for things like, you know, the ball tracking, the player tracking, kind of all the on-field stuff for Major League Baseball. And what we have is something called FieldFX, which is also player tracking and batted ball tracking and pitch tracking and all the same kind of stuff, except in our case, we do it with things like minor league or NCAA or various international leagues.
Cool.
Not the international league, but leagues overseas.
Correct.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And,
gotcha. Thank you for that correction.
Sorry. No, it's all right. I mean, we have international league park.
Yeah.
I think. You know, let's put it this way, you know, we're covering all levels and I'm assuming some of our AAA parks are international league. They must be. But the, I'm specifically working with the ball tracking, player tracking stuff, which is, believe it or not, a really, really good crossover from what I did in astrophysics. Which
Tell
is
me more.
Why I wanted to get into it, because like that's where I developed the skill set that turns out to be applicable, particularly to player tracking, which is not easy. There's just a lot of nuance. I mean, look at it this way: even if you're just talking about players, you can have as many as 13 players on the field at a given time. Plus, generally, these things track the umpires and the first and third base coaches, and you know, so it's a little it can get very, very complicated.
Wow.
So
how did that relate to tracking 13 people on a field? How does that then relate to like the work you did at NASA or like just astrophysics?
The NASA research that I did was actually looking at the, believe it or not, the corona of the sun. So if people know what that is, even if they don't know what it is. It is not just a beer. but oh God, we get so many jokes about that.
I'm sure, yeah.
But if you've ever seen an eclipse, and you know, particularly a total eclipse, and you see, you know, kind of all the cool stuff that's out around an eclipse, that's actually the corona. It turns out that if we send up satellites, the corona generally is actually super hot, like a million degrees, kind of hot or hotter.
Yeah, that's hot.
Yeah. And so it doesn't actually like give off the kind of light we can see with our eyes. It gives off X-rays.
Oh.
Or extreme ultraviolet X-rays. The point is, it's like, so this is actually, believe it or not, why it's really good that like we live down there and or down here and not like up in
yeah.
orbit, because otherwise we'd like all be irradiated to death. You know, it's like basically your doctor's X-ray machine 24/7 kind of deal.
Wow.
Probably worse. But if we do send up a satellite and we look at you know, those, if we look basically using an X-ray telescope, I mean, that's literally what it is. It turns out that the corona of the sun is actually really, really cool and just does all of this awesome stuff. In fact, the telescope, or I should say the mission, the instruments that I, observatory. It's a, sorry.
You're fine.
Solar Dynamics Observatory, SDO. That was what I was working on before before I went into baseball. Anyway, you end up seeing on the Weather Channel a lot of times, they literally will show videos of this coronal data that's being taken from space, which is awesome. And so what I looked at were particularly the origins of solar storms. These are the kind of things that like create, for instance, the Northern Lights.
Oh.
But they also end up impacting things, for instance, like radio communication. They can have it's not unusual, for instance, for if you're flying from, say, the US overseas, you know, to Europe or to Asia or whatever, if there's a solar storm in progress, they will actually divert the plane so that like it doesn't go, normally it would go over the pole, because that just happens to be like the shortest route, you know, the Earth being a sphere. And so they'll actually divert so that you're not going like basically through the Northern Lights.
Right.
Although I have seen them from an airplane. It is amazing.
Wow.
Once in my life.
That sounds cool.
But yeah, so what I looked at was basically where those storms started on the sun. And it's actually, there's just a lot going on. As opposed to, like, when you're looking at the 13 players on a ball field, you know, there are occasionally issues, but you pretty much know that the center fielder is the center fielder all the time.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to the kind of stuff I looked at where it's like, okay, this could be one of three effects, and I need to kind of figure out how to pull them apart such that I can answer the questions I'm trying to answer. And so it's like, all right, it's still complicated, but it's just a lot more straightforward because, you know, you can tell the difference between one player and another.
Sure.
As opposed to, you know, it would be a little bit like, in some ways it's like meteorology. It would be like, you know, trying to parse clouds or something.
Got it.
Into discrete whatever. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But baseball makes so much more sense.
Well, baseball's always made more sense. Come on.
Yeah, Meredith. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. That's so amazing. Well, mm-hmm. I have enjoyed this conversation thoroughly.
Yeah, this has been fun.
You're a wonderful human being, and it's been cool to... I want to let everybody know that Dr. Meredith J. Wills has been knitting this entire conversation. And what is it that you're making? Is that a sweater sleeve?
Oh, all right. Well, no one else is going to see this. But
nobody else, but I'll describe
That's
it.
That's all right. No, I'm just saying they're just not on video.
Yeah.
It's the other one of these socks.
Oh, my God. That is a beautiful sock.
It's honestly, there's not much to it. The yarn's already striped.
You chose it, though. You know what I mean?
I think I bought it at Joann's.
Meredith, I was raised at Joann's. So look at this.
There you go.
Look at this full circle. Uh-huh. You know, it's like it was in the stars.
What's your crafty stuff? I got to ask.
Oh, like crafty stuff. Let's see. I mean, I'm trying to
raise at Joann's.
Raised at Joann's, but I wasn't into it because I was like, I like sports. And so I was like very resistant to all of it. But you were talking about like weaving and stuff. And I was like, maybe I should do that. I mean, I like to draw and I take care of plants. That's what I've been into. And a big photographer.
Well, I'm glad you take care of plants because I just killed them.
I'm trying to learn how to better tend to my plants. I'm starting with a lot of succulents, but I did grow some nasturtiums, some black velvet nasturtiums, and they're going strong. So
I feel
pretty good about that. So I'm growing my sort of craft stuff, like building things and just, but slowly but surely, not getting too far into something and then just quitting because I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Weaving is cool. My aunt actually is very good at it. God, Kathy would love that. Yeah. I'm good for sure. Kathy, by the way, you have to listen to the end of a baseball podcast. She'll kill me. Hi, Kathy.
It's great to meet you.
So, but she's a remarkable weaver, but there's a lot of equipment that goes into it.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, you know, and like,
well, I don't want to do it well. I just want to do I want to make a pot holder on my couch while I'm watching baseball or something like that.
Beading is good.
All right. I'll get into beading.
Yeah.
B-E-A-D-I-N-G.
B-E-A-D.
Yeah.
That's actually, not that I do a ton of it, but I certainly have enough supplies.
Yeah.
And but yeah, that's actually one that's pretty good for sitting watching the ball game and still
nice,
you know, not having to do too much. So.
I appreciate that suggestion, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to us here on Three Swings. Dr. Meredith J. Wills.
This is great.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. It was so great to talk to you.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Engineered and mastered by Alex Sarche. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.